Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life. Hey, everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio. You know, we love memoirs because they tell the stories of people. And, you know, it goes beyond gossip, right? But we always talk about history being human gossip. And, of course, there's a lot of tragedy in history. But I think, you know, sometimes when we talk about history, we kind of go, oh, gosh, do I have to learn dates and times and everything? Well, a memoir is a really good way to know what people were really going through at different times of life, right? And so today we have a wonderful author joining us to talk about her memoir. We've got Anna Minardo. Did I say it correctly, Anna?
Yes.
I got to say Minardo. She's a novelist, but she decided to turn her pen towards the memoir side, which for me, I'm going to say that's got to be a little different and difficult to do, because a novel we can write what we want, but a memoir has got to go towards the truth, and that could be hard when it's family. And her book is called After Italy, A Family Memoir of Arranged Marriage. Yeah, imagine that. And it's still, arranged marriages happen in different cultures around the world, but in one point in history that was a big deal. My great grandmother had an arranged marriage, and I don't think she was that happy with it. But anyway, welcome, Anna. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy to get here and talk with you. You've brought up so many important points in your introduction.
Well, thank you. It must be the hair that I have in Appalachia Country.
The idea that it's not dates. It's a different history from the dates. That it's emotional truths and choices that people made, and ancestors arriving at junctures and deciding to take one road rather than the other. And then just also you're mentioning the difference between writing fiction and writing memoir. Boy,
yeah,
you have it right.
Well, because a fiction in a way is a writer, right? You get to escape and create something and change town names and people, but you know, there's still like a bane of truth somewhere, right? There's something that inspired something, right? But when it comes to a memoir, now you're talking about family. And then like my mom keeps saying she's got to write, I mean, everybody wants her, she's lived around the world. And I mean, in our family history is really quite crazy. I mean, really arranged marriages, family, like she found out one day that she's got two other sets of brothers and sisters from her father, and they're all named the same. So, and they all at the same time, and no, he's not a Mormon. So like, this is like crazy stuff. And then do you write it? And then everybody will get mad at you. So you're writing something personal, and you started doing the genealogy thing, right? Is this all stories you knew, or did you start doing like the ancestry.com to find out? How did you know of all these stories?
I didn't do ancestry.com yet. That's an idea. And
ooh,
I will say, I'd like to be interviewing you about your family. It sounds really interesting.
I always call it Nancy. My mom, I always call her Nancy from working with her, you know, as a young kid. But back in the day when we didn't have pause buttons or hold buttons on phones, right? But I always say it's her family. She keeps telling me, if it's my family, it's your family too. So you're going to have to own up to it.
Yes.
Whether
yes,
you like it or
yes,
not.
Yes.
Right. So writing this, you know, so tell us a little bit, give us an overview of your family coming from Italy to here, just like, because that's some crazy military history in there too.
Yes.
Mussolini
is
involved. I mean, Mussolini and yeah.
He had a brutal hand in my being here.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
Well, now that I think, if we think it through all the way back, yes, Mussolini had a hand in my being here. Oh, you ask such good questions. Well, my family's immigration story is the story I've been wanting to tell all my life. Mm. I was the first born in America. And I always knew that I had like a front row seat somehow, that Italy was still receding and I could see it, and that it was my responsibility I felt to hold on to their stories, to hold on to the past for them somehow. I could see that my grandparents and my parents were very busy, as the early generations of immigration really are. I benefited hugely, had a lot of education, a lot of opportunities, which is what the early generation hopes to create, and they did a very good job of that. And with that, I felt I had some responsibility to get the story down. When I was about 25, my beloved grandmother was dying early, young, 66, and dying way too young. And I felt an urgency to gather her story as much as I could. She had been one of the original immigrants. She had married in her village in southern Italy, Calabria, at 14 and a half, very young. And her mother came to her one day and said, "Listen, you've been asked for." A man from the village had seen her, went to her parents, and said, "I'd like to marry her." And my grandmother, 14 and a half, said, No, I don't know him. He's a stranger." He was 28. He had been to America and come back looking for, in need of a wife. And her mother said, "No, marry him. He'll take you to America." And I always feel like a big part of our story starts right there. Imagine that. Being a mother, and the best you can suggest to your child is marry this stranger who will take you across the ocean. And
To a
that's
place you don't know. It's not like we have
exactly
Google. We didn't have Google back then, right?
nothing. You know, they knew they'd likely never see each other again. It did happen that they did once again, but and that's the mother's greatest act of love that she could perform. So there was grandma who had begun her married life at 14 and a half, within the first year, had her first
14.
child, her only child. Yeah.
That
And then they.
parallels with our family. Like 13,
Oh.
my great grandmother, and it's my mother's mother, grandmother, was married to an Englishman in England, and they sent them over here. Same story. She was only 13 years old, married to a 20 something, and
Yeah.
she had like, I don't know, a lot of kids.
Yeah.
But 13 years old. Now, when we think
Yeah.
about our teenagers now, we're telling them no sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you know, still, behave.
Right,
So when we
right.
think, like when you're talking about your grandma, so she was 14 and a half. I mean, at that age, going across, getting married, that's got to be scary. Did they
Of
marry in
course.
this country or in
They
Italy?
married there in the village, and it was 1929, 1930. He wasn't in a hurry to get back here. There wasn't a lot of work. He had gone to Pittsburgh, a steel mill town called Braddock, where Andrew Carnegie built his first steel mill. And he worked there. But like I said, once he was in the village, and it was 1929, 30, there was no hurry to get back. So he was there about 3 years. Then he returned to America, working in the mill to raise enough money to bring over his wife and their child. And so my grandma had to wait 3 more years before she could come over here to be with him. And my mom was six by then. So my mom was born in Italy. She came here at six, but she grew up as an American child. She really did. You know, their town was an urban town of that era. A lot of immigrants from all over the world and their kids running around. And so she was pretty American until when she was 18, her parents brought her back to Italy. They did that pivot. And they took her back there to meet the man they hoped she'd marry. As she always told me, when I got there, if I didn't like him, I would not have had to marry him, but I liked him right away. And she did, and I think there was a mutual attraction there. She was 18, he was 28. It was the end of 1948. They met on Christmas Eve,
Oh, and Christmas Eve in Italy's got to be romantic, and it's so full of joy.
It's a romantic ideal,
And
but we have to remember it was 1948, and this was southern Italy, which was devastated by the war, just devastated. There was nothing there. They'd been bombed. They were short of food. It was really difficult. And to make it worse for my dad and his family, he'd lost his father just a year after the war. They had all survived it. My dad had made his way through medical school in Naples during the war.
Wow.
Here's where Mussolini comes in. And my grandfather was an outspoken anti-fascist, but he did have this big dream that all his seven kids would become educated. He was a peasant from a long line of peasants, but he wanted his kids to become professionals, and he believed education could do that. So my dad had made his way through medical school during the war. The family goal was on its way to being achieved, and within a year, his dad died. So
Oh.
now he was head of family for seven children and his mom. And at that time, in that place, arranged marriage was still not uncommon. And so the mothers were who were second cousin or, yeah, second cousins began corresponding with each other to consider this idea of the young doctor in Italy marrying the young
The
American
American,
girl, because then he'd be more easily able to immigrate, and that from U the US he could establish his career, send help back to his family, which was his first obligation, or possibly bring them here. And here's where America and the old world clashed. Given the world he grew up in and the family he'd grown up in, he had embraced that assignment from his father. You will be the head of the family. You will help your brothers and sisters attain this goal that we share. And my mom, meanwhile, an 18-year-old American girl, her idea of marriage was straight out of the Hollywood movies. And it was two people, a unit of two people whose first obligation was to each other. And they had a beautiful courtship in Italy. They had a civil ceremony that allowed my father to come over. Once he got over, they had a big church wedding. But within a very few months, he discovered there were no jobs for him in Pittsburgh. Again, he was only just learning English, and he had gotten that medical degree in Italy under Mussolini. He had been recruited into the Italian army. He had been forced to serve in the Italian army. So,
That's hard.
yeah, when he arrived in Pittsburgh, there were not a lot of hospitals. There were no hospitals or doctors who would hire him. The first job he got was at a hospital in Yonkers, New York, as an intern, whereas in Italy, he'd been a full-fledged doctor. And he was offered a room in student housing.
Oh, wow.
So clearly he couldn't take his wife with him. And so this 5-year separation happened, began. From Yonkers, he worked there for a year and a half. Then he found a job at a hospital in the Bronx, then to Washington, D.C., then to a hospital in Santa Cruz, California, then to Chicago, University of Chicago, where he did his
Wow.
residency in obstetrics. And in the early part of those 5 years, they had some visits. They tried to maintain contact, and the separation was just too brutal, and the misunderstandings between them grew. And for a couple of years, there was no correspondence whatsoever. So it was a shock, particularly for my mom, I think. It wasn't how anybody expected it to go. Then they did reconcile. Given their family backgrounds, they really had no choice.
The
His
family comes
mother,
or circles around and starts bringing you in. Like,
yeah.
huh, you know, you're not going to give up, even, you know.
Well, he had expressed interest in going back to Italy because it was harder here than he expected. And his mother said, sure, come back, but you can't come back without your wife. And she would not have gone to Italy. My mom had a serious cardiac illness. She was a cardiac patient. As a kid, she got strep throat, rheumatic fever, mitral valve damage. So she was limited in that way too. Or she might have been better able to follow him around the country, but that wasn't possible. So that was their story. They reconciled. I was born a few years later. My brother was born. And we were a very happy family with a sort of dark patch.
Yeah, that five, but it's interesting about the journey of immigrants coming over, right? Which helped build what we the country, right? And then now it's the immigrant word is so that gets
Relative.
political. Yeah, it's political, but you've got to think about people going through these immense changes. I mean, I think even the refugees and everything, people having to move, and I've lived around in different countries and being the new kid on the block all the time and knowing what it's like, but you learn skills, you learn resilience, you learn to put a smile on your face no matter what. But I've been the new kid. I mean, it's not easy. And there is a language barrier. When I got to this country as a 19-year-old, I wasn't proficient with the money because it's all the same color. The dollar bills were all the same color. And I was worked in fast food after helping my mom run a magazine. So this was like that same kind of weird story. And I almost got fired because I wasn't quick enough, even though I'm insanely good at math, because I was t taught by Indians, East Indians, from Asia. And I had, as a young kid, I'm good at math, man. But like I couldn't for some reason, and I had a different accent, so people didn't understand me. They thought I was Australian or Swedish, and I wasn't. But it was a very weird thing. So I think these stories of people understanding why people move, and we have in society for many years for many different reasons as part of survival, and to also go beyond just merely surviving. We want to
Absolutely.
thrive, isn't that part of it? And a
Absolutely.
arranged marriage was part of that. It's almost like a business partnership. And I did an interview on the show, I'm going to say 14, 13, 14, 15 years ago. And it was somebody who wrote a relationship book or something. It was so long ago. He was talking about, it was about arranged marriages and how sometimes they work better because of the two sides going in, going, this isn't what our fairy tale romance thing is in our heads and all of that. But if we're going to make this work, they almost have to come to an arrangement between each other, aside from the family. It's almost stronger as like a business relationship to make things work, saying, all right, well, I don't like this. Well, you kind of get rid of the fanciful stuff and then let the fanciful come in and go, oh, I didn't know you liked Bach, or something like that. You know what I mean? It's kind of like it's
Absolutely.
in reverse. So you can kind of weather storms better because of this bone hard kind of, if we're going to have to live together, like I'm sleeping in the separate room if you snore. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. People should sleep in separate rooms if the other person snores. I'm just kidding. Everyone's got their thing. But do you know what I mean? Do you think that, what do you think about that part
I
of it?
absolutely agree with you. A journal asked me to write a piece on what I say that my book is a cautionary tale in terms of arranged marriage. And I think marriage itself is a cautionary
Good
tale.
God, it
It's a
is. I
very
mean,
serious business, yes. And that going into an arranged marriage or a marriage that is mutually agreed upon because of love and passion, certain things do have to be nailed out at the beginning and certain understandings, just like what you were talking about, and then be ready for the things that will come up later because there's no way to know what's going to come up until you're actually in the rooms of your marriage. And there's no
It's an
way to
emotion, it's
anticipate.
an emotional reversal, right? Because there's the hormonal thing when you meet someone, and so passion and emotional stuff gets in the way of reality, I
Right,
think. And we're
right.
supposed to do that because nature wants us to make babies with the people we think look cute.
Exactly. Yeah,
Because it's like that's going to
exactly.
make us, we're attracted to people for baby making in biology.
At first,
Right?
and then for decades of different needs,
Yes,
companions,
yes.
all kinds of things. But no, I love that you were referring to the, you brought us around to the immigrants of today. You know, it was very hard to place this book. It was rejected a lot. And often the question came up, you know, it's 2024. The great waves of Italian migration were in the 1890s,
No.
and then again in the early, and
You're
I
making
thought,
me mad.
well, it forced me to question myself and clearly push on until the book was accepted. And I think it landed in the perfect place. I'm so happy with my
Tell your.
publisher, Bordighera Press.
See, I needed you to pronounce that. I was hoping you would say it.
Bordighera, which is the name of a city in Italy, but it's the name of this wonderful press that publishes work, scholarship and literature of the Italian diaspora. And they are connected with the City University of New York's Italian American Institute, the John Calandra Institute for Italian American Studies.
That's awesome.
And I, like I said, I'm thrilled with where it landed. But before, when it was rejected and the idea came up that, oh, it's kind of an old story, out of date, forced me to ask myself, why is it relevant? And I think it's relevant just for the reasons you were saying. People are constantly coming here and to other countries looking for a new and better life. And how could they not? If they're living in horrible conditions, political, whatever
Climate.
conditions, climate conditions, poverty, not enough food, bad water,
Freedom.
How and freedom, personal freedom, absolutely. How can they not try to change that, not only for themselves, but especially for their children? Every immigrant story is a love story.
Yes, and a lot of times they are having arranged marriages. Honestly, if you think about it,
Right,
there are
right.
arranged marriages in various cultures happening now.
Yes, they
It's
do.
it
Yes,
is
they
not
do.
it's not a non thing. I mean, even in India right now, there's arranged marriages.
Absolutely. And a lot of young Indian, East Indian people in America still want their parents to arrange their marriages. That idea that who knows me better, who cares more deeply for my happiness. And I think that's a beautiful, beautiful tradition. It's always a matter of mutual agreement between the two parties, and that they find some common ground. And my parents had that 10-year age gap for one thing, and then their life experiences were so profoundly different. He had lived through that war, and she had grown up under the care of a father who was very overprotective. She was an only child, and she was ill, and so she was very overprotected. So it was
Yeah.
difficult for them to find a mutual. And then another part of this story, which you kind of have to read the book to get the full story on it.
I don't want you to give the farm
I
away.
don't want to give
No
spoilers.
giving, but you can give me some olive oil from Italy if you want.
I
I
wish
want the
I
real
could.
deal. I know. The
I
real
wish I
deal is
could.
there's nothing like the real deal on that. So I'm just
That's
saying.
true. Yeah.
But yeah, tell us the third part of this.
Well, there was my father came over, and like I said, pretty quickly found that the streets were not lined with gold, and that he was not finding jobs as easily as he had imagined he could. And then there was a fallout between the groom and his father-in-law, my
Ooh.
mom's husband and her father.
Ooh.
And they disagreed over, get this, the dowry,
No.
which when I learned this when I was in my late 30s, and I'd always had a little bit of a hard time with arranged marriage. You know, I'm an American kid. I grew up in the Pittsburgh suburbs. was like, oh, mom, your parents found the guy for you? I don't like that. But when I was, what, 37, 38, and heard a dowry, that a dowry was involved, a failed dowry, that was really unsavory to me. And so I had to look into it. And that was one of the prompts to dig into this story, which, as I
Wow.
said, I've been trying to figure out a way to tell it most of my life. My first novel, The Courtyard of Dreams, was published in 1993, and that was my first attempt to tell our family story.
Okay.
It's an autobiographical novel. It deals with the issues of cultural identity. Am I Italian or American? It's a teenage girl dealing with her overprotective Italian father. So, in a sense, I was trying to tell my story and my mother's, our experiences with our dads. We were very attached to our dads, my mom and I. But as my mom said when she read that book, she said, "But you killed the mother. There's no mother." And it's true. There was the mother had died off stage, and
Oh
the
dear.
premise of the book, the novel, was that this American girl is growing up with her Italian dad, and what's going to happen? It was just easier for me at that point. If I included the mom in the story, I would have
Yeah,
had to
things gonna
deal
get
with their
complicated.
wedding, marriage complications, and I wasn't ready to do that. Then I wrote a second novel, far, far from our family, Falling in Love with Natasha, which is about a dancer and her daughter, teenage daughter. And then it was still, I recently found a note from 2008 when I was trying to decide, okay, for my third project, am I going to write fiction or I've got this memoir? And I wrote this line, that family memoir is the book that has frightened me all my life.
Oh, then you got to do it.
So then I had to do it.
You got to
Then I
jump
had to
in.
do
You
it,
can't.
right.
Well, I think it's, you know, when you're talking about the story from, way back when, everybody knows it's not. If you, we do, we have, you're going to be on it too, our History Channel, our Way Back When History Channel. Right now, everybody's on a mad dash to get every last World War II era story. You know, the greatest generation is leaving us, literally, you know. And before that, obviously, I mean, yours spans a little bit of all, but it is such a modern history story that is still very connected, that like my age and younger, wanting to know about their grandparents, great grandparents, it's still tangible to them. Whereas sometimes when you start going into your great 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 grandparents, you're like, it's not that tangible yet. But this is tangible for many, many families to also understand. And dowries, I grew up with that term. I grew up in Africa, and that's what happened. Women got sold for cattle, and it was crazy. But that, and
And they
a
still
lot of time,
do.
oh, and a lot of times the women, the daughters get sold off, and it's horrible. There's some really bad, there's bad stuff that happens with that. Girls getting sold to an old man and he's just raping her and all of that for a dowry, because the
The family needs it,
and there's just every cultural connection is different, right? But women, the dowry thing has been going on since the beginning of time, basically, right? We have always been almost this sense of livestock, and that's how it is to me. When you say the word dowry, I go right back to Africa, and I go, like, hell no. So it's really hard. And when you think about Italy and dowries, to me, that just, like, I'm like, that kind of, what? You're doing it too? It's just kind of this, it's, I think all cultures have sold their women. Yet it wasn't necessarily done to sell your mom. It was, it, you know what I mean? It's not, it was just kind of a, it's weird because you're capturing this time of when generational change was happening within cultures, and women's rights and movements were also slowly beginning at that time in those eras, right? women started, to wear pants. My Nana did. She was like, she was one of the first women to ride a motorcycle, and she rode a drove a Model T Ford from California to Canada. Anyway, she's a Spitfire. She was a
She's a
Spitfire.
yeah.
She's a little lady, and here we are as giants, but she was a little lady, and she drank her little shot of beer every night. My Nana was rocking. She was a rock star with what she did, but she kind of took like that was what was happening. And at the same time, saw this revolution was happening for women. So it was like this, yeah, this is kind of my ticket out, even though he became a pain in her butt, literally. He just, he, when he lost his job as a typesetter, just sat at home and couldn't go and find another job, couldn't do, he just lost his identity, right? And here she was going, I can wear pants. It's legal for women to wear pants. And that means when I put groceries in the back of the car that I can now drive, no one sees my butt. I can bend over. That was her thing. And so this is the same era of time, right? And when you look at this,
The
I'm going,
50s.
yeah, that this is we were going through changes. And so it's like, here's a ticket out, but it comes with this old tradition that sucks. In a way
It's
of saying it.
very hard to end cultural habits,
Yeah.
and it was still common custom at that in that place at that time. And I mean, there the history goes way back. The idea that the woman, the man would now be keeping this woman for the rest of her life and providing for her, et cetera. And then also, it was a kind of form of pride for the family, how what they would be able to give. There was, it was a status indicator. There, it's a very complicated word. It's a very complicated structure. But one of the reasons I felt that our story is relevant is that it's a microcosm. For all the things you've been mentioning, for centuries of migration around the world, for centuries of men marrying women and their families paying him to do that because it meant a certain thing that now she was part of his family and his name would predominate and
Wow.
it's all in that story, in the
And that's important
microcosm.
because, okay, so we talked about numbers, right? The timelines. The only way to understand timelines is to know from the story, that connection, that emotional connection. And so when you read a memoir like yours, it allows us to identify and put understand the timeline, the dates of what was happening, so that we can look at what's going on now. I mean, look at what's, I mean, I my Nana would be really mad at what's going on for women right
Of
now.
course,
And she wouldn't be very polite about it either,
right.
verbally. She's a lady, but there's times to not be a lady, she would say, So when we do need to have that timeline of those years, so that we don't go backwards in the timeline. And
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
that's what's so beautiful and so important about telling stories. But what was it like for you to write this as a novelist? And I know you're also a professor of creative writing, going into that and then going, okay, now this is like emotionally connected to me, my blood running through my veins. These people are in me as I'm typing. Your blood flowing to your fingertips as you type are coming from these people you're writing about. What was that like?
Well, I started because, like I said, I could not do it. I had to do it. And as my grandmother was dying at 66, she said to me, we were alone in the hospital room, and she said, "Do you know what I'd like?" And I said, "What?" And she said, "I'd like to write the story of my life." And I said, "Well, I could help you." And she said, "Yeah, you do it." And I
Oh,
felt I
yeah.
understood her. I kind of had to do it then.
Yeah,
So
you're
there
gonna get
was that.
haunted.
There was that.
Yeah.
And And then to actually do the work, writing a narrative is writing a narrative. You create scenes and build the scenes on each other, and you create chapters and move things along. What was different that I was aware of was the use of dialogue. With fiction, you create scenes and you put words in the into the characters' mouths. But you can't do that with memoir. And what I found was that there were so many lines of dialogue that people had said that I remembered so vividly. Like my grandma saying to me, "Do you know what I'd like?" And that whole hospital scene came to life around my remembering that moment. And there were many, my mom saying, "Well, when I got to Italy, if I didn't like him, I wouldn't have had to marry him, but I liked him right away." And when I remembered that line and wrote it down, then I could see that 18-year-old girl arriving on Christmas Eve. It's freezing. They've had, I think, 10 days on the ocean, then a train ride, then,
See.
and meeting this guy, and all the relatives are around, and the stone floors are cold, and they're trying to give her little cups of anisette to toast and to take a toast.
Wow.
And so it was the way I was informed by lines of dialogue was a huge help, and I was aware that that was a big difference in creating this.
Did you get to read diaries and things like that, or
Oh
letters?
yeah, yes.
Oh.
Yeah. I had my mom's diary of those 5 years. Which she had always said, "You'll read it someday, you'll read it." And I didn't want to, but she left it for me. And I put that off as long as I could. And then I sat down and I spent about 4 days doing nothing but reading that. I had to read with a ma magnifying glass.
Wow.
Her script was so small, and there were 5 years of listings on one page. It was like a young girl's little diary with a key.
Oh yeah, I have one of those.
So that's where she was telling her marriage story. And then
Whew.
th this also helped a great deal. When my dad died, my brother and I were cleaning out his desk, and we found this really big file, a manila file, filled with all his Italian documents, starting with report cards from grade school,
Wow.
charting his whole education in Italy. His military papers from when he was conscripted into the Italian army, his education, his booklet with all his grades and the tests he took at the university, and then the English translations that he had to pay to have done when he was here applying for jobs.
Wow, and that's
So
not
he
cheap. That's not cheap.
it was his full paper trail
Wow.
that he had,
Wow.
and he kept it. And I felt like, in a way, that he'd kept that. He had a career of over, almost 40 years in America. He was solidly here. He was an American citizen. But he kept all those documents. It was almost as if, you never
It's
know.
proof. It's like proof.
Somebody might
Yeah.
be asking to know where you came from and what you're up to. And so he migrate to my great benefit, I have all the papers and the documents, and
Wow. Wow. Did you touch them as
fascinating.
you're writing them? Just kind of like have a tactile thing. I know that sounds weird, but it kind of is this personal thing.
His dad, who was very instrumental in our family, because he's the one who came up with that idea of education and becoming professionals, none of us knew him because he died so young, before any of the kids were married and had kid children. But he's this larger than life figure for us. He's a mystery to us. But among those papers, I found two telegrams. And in those days, you did not send telegrams for just for nothing. It was
Right.
wartime. And there were a few telegrams where my father would say, because he had to leave the village and go to school, middle school, in a city away from the village, because it only went to fourth grade. He would send a telegram to his father saying, "Okay, come get me. I'm done." And his father would walk go by foot and collect him and bring him back for the summer or whatever. So there were a few of those utilitarian telegrams, like, you know,
Wow.
text, come get me. And then there were two, where one where my father sent a telegram to his father saying, I graduated, I passed my exams.
That's awesome.
With honors. And
Oh.
then like a telegram for nothing but to say, congratulations.
Oh.
I'm proud. And it
Oh,
was,
that's
you
special.
know, and when I got to hold those two telegrams, you know, to see
Wow.
that telegram,
I
my
don't even think people
grandfather.
know what a telegram looks like anymore.
Well, I have them framed here.
That's you know, this story, that's this power. There's a power to, there's an internal strength that's of the human spirit. These are stories of the human spirit, of overcoming, resiliency, definitely resiliency, right? Would you say
Definitely
that's
resilience
huge?
and so much love. And I just think whenever we see photos of people at the, you know, coming through into our country at various borders, every one of them has
Just
that
like us.
spirit, that resilience, or how could they have gotten to that point?
Yeah.
And they're doing what they're doing because they must,
Yeah.
and because of love.
Well, and I
And
tell people,
hope.
get used to it, because it's going to happen all over the world all the time. As
Yes.
climate change happens, we are going to have refugees. And as all this political strife is going on and these wars,
Right.
this is not going to be going away anytime soon. So we need to start having a conversation. And I think your
Absolutely.
story helps open some closed doors, possibly, to some understanding, to maybe start to realize, hey, our neighbors, our immigrant neighbors, hey, you know what? We're all human. We're all related in that sense, aren't we?
Right.
We all want to care about our families. And yes, there's criminals in the world. And most times criminals are coming from a traumatic background. Let's all
Absolutely.
remember that too, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's kind of just be human with each other. Have you been to your family's home in Italy? Have you gone back over?
Yes. Yes, I'm
That
very
has to
lucky.
make it. Oh.
I've been there several times at different stages in my life. Got to be there when my grandmother was still alive, the house where the my dad and all his
Oh.
brothers and sisters grew up. And just sort of around the corner and down a few tight streets to the house where my mom was born and where her grandparents lived. And
Wow. Wow.
yes, it's
That's
beautiful to go
special.
there. It's very special. It's very special. Yeah.
So this is awesome, because your book is out today, everybody. We're airing this on publishing day. It's a busy day on Big Blend Radio. 2 days after Mother's Day and my mom's birthday. That's a big deal. Nancy's birthday. So everyone, you feel free to email us and wish Nancy happy birthday. But with this, you know, I know you're going to do some traveling with the book, right? And then
Yes.
all your books, you know, so one book means you get to share all your books, which is exciting. But I want to know, just tell everybody a little bit about your travel plans. And obviously they can go to your website too. And everyone, that's linked in the show notes. So annamonardo.com. So it's Anna with two N's and an A, Monardo, M-O-N-A-R-D-O. Go to that website. And of course, get the book wherever you buy books. And so there's that part, which I want you to tell everyone about. But I do want to ask, are you open to doing book club kind of
I
conversations? Because I
love
think,
book clubs.
yeah, isn't this
I
like the
love
perfect?
book clubs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're
Oh,
so
cool.
fun. I love them. I love them in person or on Zoom. I love meeting with any kinds of groups, classes. So yes, absolutely. If book clubs are figuring
Yeah.
out your reading list for the next few months, keep me in mind after Italy. I'd
Yeah.
love to talk about that. And
And you
what
can have
often
Italian food, by the way, when you do the book club meetings,
that
right?
has
So,
happened. That has happened, and that's been wonderful. That's been wonderful. But what often happens is what's happened with us today, Lisa, which I've really enjoyed, is that people start talking about their own family
yeah, you
stories,
do. You
which
make
is
me think about,
such an honor to hear those.
And in a, it tenderizes them, because sometimes in families, things can get volatile, right? You know
Yes.
that. I mean,
Yeah.
your story gets into some
Yes.
gritty things too.
Yes, it
Okay. So,
does. Yeah.
it ain't all pretty. It ain't.
No, it's not.
It's
It's
not.
not.
And I don't know any family who's doesn't have some grit in there that we all want the skeleton in the closet thing, but that's unrealistic. I'm sorry, there is no, and in that era, like in those eras, everybody did keep everything quiet, you
There
know?
was a lot of pressure to do that, to maintain
Yep, especially
in
women, don't
Italian,
you? Yeah,
we call it la bella figura.
we'll cut your tongue off, kind of
Yeah.
thing.
Right.
So there's always
Yeah.
that don't talk, don't, the gossip was a bad thing. And I laugh about gossip, but I want people to connect with history. So I think it's important. And when I can look, our family's kind of, is interesting on all sides, but it humanizes it when someone's written about and gone through that process, because that you're looking at all kinds of emotions to write it in real. It makes you kind of look at, realize what people are going through before us were going through eras where they didn't have Google. They didn't, I brought that up at the beginning. We didn't have tools that we have today. We didn't even understand mental health or stress
So
or
true.
so all these
Yeah.
things now that we know thanks to science and medicine, right? We didn't understand all those things. And it
Right.
was, oh, just get the hell over it, move
Right,
on.
right,
And
right.
the moving on thing without fixing the root continues through generations.
It can
And
be
so
very
that's why I
hurtful.
think it brings things up for people to start talking. Like for me, I'm going, oh my gosh, your story is like, there's like, because it's generational and these things happened around that time frame,
Right.
so it's a form of healing. And most importantly, you can't heal without understanding. And so it's a understanding. So you bring things out that make you look at it in different lights of understanding. Does that make sense? Like,
Yes, and what happened for me is that where I had questions before, I now have more compassion.
oh, that's it. The compassion part comes in.
Yeah. I wish it could have been different for them, and then it would have been different for me. And now I just can see what happened, and I'm so sorry. It was difficult in the way it was difficult for them, and I have a greater love and appreciation for, wow, you went through a lot to keep our family together and to
Do you
remain
feel
present
free?
and to remain loving. Do I feel?
Free, a
I
little
do.
freer.
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
that's good.
I very
That's
much
good.
do. Yes.
That's awesome. This has
Yeah.
been wonderful talking with you. I can't wait for you to come back on because I know you're going to write more, right? You are.
I absolutely am. Yes.
I love
Yes.
it. I love it. So everyone, AnnaMonardo.com is the website to go to. Stay tuned for her coming to a neighborhood near you, right? You're going to be going through some certain regions and
Omaha
travels.
today. I'll be in Pittsburgh on May 23rd and May 24th. I will be in Atlanta on June 13th. I will be in Belfast, Maine in July. And then I will
Wow.
see from there. So.
She's taking the summer off. She's bearing her soul everywhere she goes. And she opened up the closet. I mean, come on, all those skeletons are running around now. You're going to be tired by the time,
When I
summer
get to
passed.
Belfast, Maine, I can walk on the beach and relax a bit.
That sounds really good right now, doesn't it?
It does.
It does.
It
Thank you
does.
so much, Anna. It's been a true pleasure.
Thank you, Lisa. I've loved our conversation. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.